Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 11th of September 2013. Welcome to another show. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. My name's Hereward Fenton, and I'll be running through some Australian news, some global news, and I'll also be speaking to a guest in the second hour, Scott Bartle, a man who has done extensive and somewhat painful research into some of the fraudulent aspects of our government in Australia and misrepresentations of basic fundamental institutions. Scott has produced a documentary called Frequently Unanswered Questions of the Australian Government, which actually documents his personal journey and saga trying to import a car into Australia. But this led him on a journey to really get into understanding some of the deceptions that have become kind of foundational to the way in which modern law works. So I'll be very interested to talk to Scott about all this in the second hour, so do stay with us. In the first hour, I'm going to be returning to the subject of Syria. I'm going to be playing to you a clip from the latest speech by Barack Obama, which echoes many of the themes we've seen in previous statements and actually goes some length to repeating the very, very disingenuous style that we saw from John Kerry in recent speeches. I spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks decrying the deceptive nature of John Kerry's speeches, and I now have to turn that same approach on to the president, because we've seen the same thing again, ladies and gentlemen. The incredibly manipulative use of the mass casualties from an apparent chemical attack to emotionally persuade you into what is really essentially another crime against humanity, to use violence as a justification for violence, is something we really need to all pause and consider and really take in, to understand that what these people are actually doing is they're proposing that we should respond to one act of violence with another act of violence. How can that ever be the right approach? How can that ever restore normality? I mean, we're not just talking here about one injustice, about, you know, maybe someone having been killed, someone having been robbed. We're not even talking about a crime that has a clear perpetrator and a clear victim. We're talking about an incident that is surrounded by mystery, which no doubt involved mass casualties, but which has never been properly investigated. And yet this is being put to you as if it were an absolutely proven fait accompli that this really happened in the way they say it does. At the same time, they're also now bringing in the possibility of what they're calling a diplomatic solution. But this is incredibly deceptive, folks. And I have to say, I think all the indications are that this is actually a play that the Syrian leader is being led into some kind of trap, and that the Russians, in supporting the latest initiative, which is to have the Syrian chemical weapons arsenal put under UN control, that the Russians, in endorsing this, are perhaps, and I hate to say it, but are perhaps backing away from their staunch support of Syria. Because, you see, if all along the Syrian government has been adamant that they did not conduct this attack, And that, of course, is the main defense and the best possible argument you could use for why any military intervention in Syria against the government would be completely wrong, completely unjust. The question of whether or not Syria has chemical stockpiles and to what extent they are, that's another question. And that question has to be considered in the context of the worldwide prevalence of these weapons, the fact that it's a sovereign nation, and not considered simply as the pretext or justification for why they should be pressured or bullied by the United States. My position on this, my way of looking at this, is that, of course, I see chemical weapons as being a horrendous thing, totally against the use of chemical weapons. In fact, I'm really against the use of military force, period, unless it's in defence. You know, defence of one's country, I believe, is the only pretext for using military force. But everything about the military force of the United States is about attack. The whole thing is about attack. America has not been threatened on its in its homeland in any kind of serious way ever, really. I mean, there have been a few minor incidents over the last couple of hundred years, but what we see in the American military machine is basically an empire of conquest. And to me, common sense view is, well, that is a crime against humanity. And that is illegal and unjustified. Yeah, that should be censured by the UN. Weapons of mass destruction are a very, very frightening prospect, no matter whether they're chemical, biological, nuclear, or so-called conventional weapons. And there's such a wide range of so-called conventional weapons that actually include depleted uranium shells, that actually include white phosphorus bombs, that actually have included in the past Agent Orange and napalm. But let's consider chemical weapons in themselves. I've got an article here from foreignpolicy.com, which asserts on the basis of CIA reports that Israel actually has a stockpile of chemical weapons. According to the document, American spy satellites uncovered a probable chemical weapon nerve agent production facility and storage facility at the Dimona Sensitive Storage Area in the Negev Desert. While we cannot confirm whether the Israelis possess lethal chemical agents, several indicators lead us to believe that they have available to them at least persistent and non-persistent nerve agents, a mustard agent, and several riot control agents matched with suitable delivery systems. I can tell you I'm a little concerned about Israel. I'm very concerned about Israel in this whole situation where we have what is a probable false flag scenario. We have credible evidence that that the nerve agents may have come from Egypt, but of course they may have come from Israel too. Israel, of course, bordering on Syria makes that a possibility. We know that the rebels had a huge amount to gain from this event, but only if it does lead to the American attack. Of course, if it doesn't lead to the American attack, they won't have gained from it. But what we're seeing now, what we appear to be seeing, is the playing out of a strategy. And it looks to me as if the Syrian government is not doing too well in that strategy. Let me play to you now the recent speech from Barack Obama that I mentioned earlier.
Tonight I want to talk to you about Syria, why it matters, and where we go from here. Over the past 2 years, what began as a series of peaceful protests against the repressive regime of Bashar al-Assad has turned into a brutal civil war. Over 100,000 people have been killed. Millions have fled the country. In that time, America has worked with allies to provide humanitarian support, to help the moderate opposition, and to shape a political settlement. But I have resisted calls for military action because we cannot resolve someone else's civil war through force, particularly after a decade of war in Iraq and Afghanistan. The situation profoundly changed, though, on August 21st, when Assad's government gassed to death over 1,000 people, including hundreds of children. The images from this massacre are sickening.
Just pause it there. Notice how not really interested in evidence anymore. There is a little further on in this speech some token reference to some facts, but it appears now that the rhetoric has just moved on. It's like this was by the Assad government. And, you know, that is still in dispute, and there is still information coming in. I've got a recent article here from Russia Today. Chemical attack was Syrian rebel provocation, former hostages say. Two Europeans who were abducted and held hostage for several months in Syria claim they overheard an exchange between their captors, which proves that rebels were behind the recent chemical attack. Now, one of them has said these two journalists, they overheard the conversation, and the conversation was suggesting that the use of weapons was a strategic move by the opposition aimed at getting the West to intervene. In this conversation, they said that the gas attack on two neighborhoods of Damascus was launched by the rebels as a provocation to lead the West to intervene militarily. So just bear that in mind as we continue now to listen to Barack Obama's speech.
Men, women, children lying in rows, killed by poison gas. Others foaming at the mouth, gasping for breath. A father clutching his dead children, imploring them to get up and walk. On that terrible night, the world saw in gruesome detail the terrible nature of chemical weapons and why the overwhelming majority of humanity has declared them off limits, a crime against humanity, and a violation of the laws of war. This was not always the case. In World War I, American GIs were among the many thousands killed by deadly gas in the trenches of Europe. In World War II, the Nazis used gas to inflict the horror of the Holocaust. Because these weapons can kill on a mass scale, with no distinction between soldier and infant, the civilized world has spent a century working to ban them.
We'll just leave it there. I'll return to that speech when we come back from the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us. Got a great show lined up. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I've been playing you here the latest warmongering speech from Barack Obama, which is a strange mixture of kind of backpedaling diplomacy and threats and then token gestures to democracy. It's a really strange speech, but which has so much nastiness and so much dishonesty in it that I think it's vital that we study it. So let me just continue now where we left off at the end of the last section.
And in 1997, the United States Senate overwhelmingly approved an international agreement prohibiting the use of chemical weapons, now joined by 189 governments that represent 98% of humanity. On August 21st, these basic rules were violated, along with our sense of common humanity. No one disputes that chemical weapons were used in Syria. The world saw thousands of videos, cell phone pictures, and social media accounts from the attack. And humanitarian organizations told stories of hospitals packed with people who had symptoms of poison gas. Moreover, we know the Assad regime was responsible. In the days leading up to August 21st, we know that Assad's chemical weapons personnel prepared for an attack near an area where they mix sarin gas.
Interesting, again, I just point out he uses the phrase, "we know." This is carefully scripted, folks. I mean, this is not just off the cuff, right? Every speech that that the president gives is written with deep consideration for what the spin should be. He says, "we know." This has been the theme that we've seen around the world when every leader of any country has spoken about this, that they talk about how they know. We saw last week, we saw Kevin Rudd, the outgoing Prime Minister in Australia, saying that he was confident that the Assad regime had used chemical weapons. We saw the French President, François Hollande, saying that that Assad should be punished. He actually used the word punished. And yet this evidence has never really been forthcoming. But they talk about it as if it's already there, as if you've already seen it, as if it's already been on the table. And so we just have to continually return to the fact that it hasn't been seen, you know, that the evidence hasn't been seen. So they're, again, asking you to trust them. Let's continue. Let's see if there is actually any evidence brought forward in this speech.
They distributed gas masks to their troops. Then they fired rockets from a regime-controlled area into 11 neighborhoods that the regime has been trying to wipe clear of opposition forces.
Okay, there was one factoid in there. He said that they distributed gas masks to their troops. Interesting. I'd like to know more about that. I'd like to know more about the specific incidents he said occurred prior to the attack. But again, where does that information come from? It's just like, here it is. They did this. And quite often when we see this, when this is done by these sort of propagandistic statements, you find that it's actually not true. They get away with it because they can make these grand speeches where they make a statement like that and you find out that it's not even true. I don't know. Of course, it may be true. But of course, the fact that they gave their troops gas masks could have been that they were themselves afraid of being attacked. So anyway, let's continue.
Shortly after those rockets landed, the gas spread, and hospitals filled with the dying and the wounded. We know senior figures in Assad's military machine reviewed the results of the attack, and the regime increased their shelling of the same neighborhoods in the days that followed. We've also studied samples of blood and hair from people at the site that tested positive for sarin. When dictators commit atrocities, they depend upon the world to look the other way until those horrifying pictures fade from memory. But these things happened. The facts cannot be denied. The question now is what the United States of America and the international community is prepared to do about it. Because what happened to those people, to those children, is not only a violation of international law, it's also a danger to our security. Let me explain why. If we fail to act, the Assad regime will see no reason to stop using chemical weapons. As the ban against these weapons erodes, other tyrants will have no reason to think twice about acquiring poison gas and using them.
Let's just pause to consider the logic behind that statement. It's quite interesting. He says if we fail to act, that the regime will see no reason to stop continuing to do this. But that implies that by taking this action, that they will be somehow prevented from doing it again, if indeed they ever did it. And yet at the same time, we're told that it's a very limited strike. We're told there's no boots on the ground. And of course, they've had so much advanced warning now that they've had a chance to probably move these weapons to all kinds of secure locations. Why on earth wouldn't they use them again if it's their last chance of winning, especially if, you know, if they're going to go down in flames, if the Americans are going to launch attacks? I mean, of course, you know, they're going to use them again if they've used them before, unless they were completely obliterated, unless they were completely prevented and removed. And of course, the only way to do that would be a complete invasion and a complete occupation. But of course, the Americans are committed to not doing that. And I believe the Americans are actually committed to allowing the fanatical, morally reprehensible extremists who have shown themselves to be willing to commit all kinds of atrocities. The Americans actually want them to end up being running the country and then indeed have access to the chemical weapons stockpiles. I mean, we're dealing with just nonsense in terms of logic. It's just incredible, isn't it? So just continue here now with the speech, and I will continue to interrupt it where I see fit.
Over time, our troops would again face the prospect of chemical warfare on the battlefield. And it could be easier for terrorist organizations to obtain these weapons and to use them to attack civilians. If fighting spills beyond Syria's borders, these weapons could threaten allies like Turkey, Jordan, and Israel. And a failure to stand against the use of chemical weapons would weaken prohibitions against other weapons of mass destruction and embolden Assad's ally, Iran, which must decide whether to ignore international law by building a nuclear weapon or to take a more peaceful path. This is not a world we should accept. This is what's at stake. And that is why, after careful deliberation, I determined that it is in the national security interests of the United States to respond to the Assad regime's use of chemical weapons through a targeted military strike. The purpose of this strike would be to deter Assad from using chemical weapons, to degrade his regime's ability to use them, and to make clear to the world that we will not tolerate their use. That's my judgment as Commander-in-Chief. But I'm also the president of the world's oldest constitutional democracy. So even though I possess the authority to order military strikes, I believed it was right, in the absence of a direct or imminent threat to our security, to take this debate to Congress. I believe our democracy is stronger when the president acts with the support of Congress. And I believe that America acts more effectively abroad when we stand together. This is especially true after a decade that put more and more war-making power in the hands of the president and more burdens on the shoulders of our troops while sidelining the people's representatives from the critical decisions about when we use force. Now, I know that after the terrible toll of Iraq and Afghanistan, the idea of any military action, no matter how limited, is not going to be popular. After all, I've spent 4.5 years working to end wars, not to start them. Our troops are out of Iraq. Our troops are coming home from Afghanistan. And I know Americans want all of us in Washington, especially me, to concentrate on the task of building our nation here at home.
We're just going to break. You with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm playing the latest deceptive, warmongering piece of propaganda from the President of the United States for our analysis and comment. Do stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. Thank you. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's a great pleasure to have your company today. Although it's a great source of pain and agony to have to think about these things that are going on in the world, wouldn't it be nice to be able to just live one's life in peace and not bother anyone and not be bothered? You know, that would be my goal, you know, to be able to pursue something that you really wanted to do for your own edification, your own enjoyment, something of value to people. But I feel that I have to do this show. I feel I'm actually forced because of the nature of the real crisis, the nature of the undermining of freedom, the rollback of 1,000 years of civilization with these barbaric people in charge of governments around the world, that some people are actually called to do something about it. And I don't know where it's all going to lead. I mean, the way things are headed, folks, people who speak out, people like me, we're going to be silenced. I mean, if you actually look at the degree of ruthless suppression of freedom in the world, the ruthless pursuing of the agendas of the global corporate oligarchies, it would be foolish to assume that they will not eventually silence free speech in the Western world. So it's even more important to continue while we're able to. And I always say that to everyone listening, you know, if there's anything you can do, now is a time to do it. Even just by supporting us here at Truth News Radio, you're doing something. We're actually going to be launching a new website soon with a subscription service, because we want to actually get some money in so we can actually do more, so I'm able to cover more stories and do it more professionally and get more really good guests on. So, you know, if you're able to support what Truth News does to any level, then you are also contributing to our effort to stem the tide of this tyranny that's sweeping the globe. I mean, it really is just incredible. I mean, listening to this speech by Barack Obama, it's had the same feeling that I had when I listened to the speech by John Kerry. It's just dripping with deception, dripping with lies on so many levels. Some of them just purely factual lies. Some of them lies about, you know, violence being the justification for violence. And the worst lie of all being that the message is that, you know, we care about you. We care about the truth. We care about protecting people. We care about the children. You know, all those poor kids who were killed by those chemical weapons. We really care about that. When all the evidence of history indicates that the agencies behind the US government probably encouraged this, if not actually deliberately acted it out, but certainly encouraged it. It's the opportunistic principles that the CIA has followed in trying to change the geopolitical structure of the world. They've done it decade after decade after decade. They just keep getting away with it. And so they use the horror of an event like this that they themselves have engineered to then get your endorsement to perpetrate yet another horror. I mean, there is something uniquely horrifying about that in itself. You know, the horror of the deception is something I find in many ways the hardest thing to actually to deal with, because it really is very unsettling. It's really very disturbing. So let's continue now with more of this horror from the horrible President of the United States.
Putting people back to work, educating our kids, growing our middle class. It's no wonder then that you're asking hard questions. So let me answer some of the most important questions that I've heard from members of Congress and that I've read in letters that you've sent to me. First, many of you have asked, won't this put us on a slippery slope to another war? One man wrote to me that we are still recovering from our involvement in Iraq. A veteran put it more bluntly, this nation is sick and tired of war. My answer is simple. I will not put American boots on the ground in Syria. I will not pursue an open-ended action like Iraq or Afghanistan. I will not pursue a prolonged air campaign like Libya or Kosovo. This would be a targeted strike to achieve a clear objective, deterring the use of chemical weapons and degrading Assad's capabilities. Others have asked whether it's worth acting if we don't take out Assad.
Just point out, so far, for the first more than half of this speech, it has been just continuous warmongering, continuous justification for attack. We must attack. We will attack. It's going to happen, right? That's been the general message. You'll see towards the end of the speech, it starts to soften. And he starts to talk about this diplomatic option. And yet, it's made ludicrous by the fact that his whole message up to that point had been the near certainty of military action. There's a psychological operation, I mean, being subjected to that and then being told, oh, we're going to be all diplomatic and we're going to deal with this a different way. But we'll get on to that.
As some members of Congress have said, there's no point in simply doing a pinprick strike in Syria. Let me make something clear. The United States military doesn't do pinpricks. Even a limited strike will send a message to Assad that no other nation can deliver. I don't think we should remove another dictator with force. We learned from Iraq that doing so makes us responsible for all that comes next. But a targeted strike can make Assad or any other dictator think twice before using chemical weapons. Other questions involve the dangers of retaliation. We don't dismiss any threats, but the Assad regime does not have the ability to seriously threaten our military. Any other retaliation they might seek is in line with threats that we face every day. Neither Assad nor his allies have any interest in escalation that would lead to his demise.
Let's just consider what he said there. I mean, he's basically telling you that this regime will use these banned weapons on innocent civilians, killing children, and they're quite prepared to do that. And of course, we know that there is a worldwide network of terrorism. We know that a country with the wealth and reach of Syria would certainly be able to get weapons of mass destruction out of the country. And if they're as evil as we're told that they are, how can he assure you that there is no threat to America? I'm not just talking about threat to American troops. I'm talking about a threat to American civilians. It's completely preposterous. I mean, the man is just lying. It's just like one continuous lie, this entire speech. Anyway, let's continue.
And our ally Israel can defend itself with overwhelming force, as well as the unshakable support of the United States of America.
And chemical weapons, as we saw before.
Many of you have asked a broader question. Why should we get involved at all in a place that's so complicated, and where, as one person wrote to me, those who come after Assad may be enemies of human rights? It's true that some of Assad's opponents are extremists. But al-Qaeda will only draw strength in a more chaotic Syria if people there see the world doing nothing to prevent innocent civilians from being gassed to death.
He's not preventing anything. He's not going to prevent innocent civilians from being gassed to death. He's not actually even talking about forcibly dismantling the weapons facilities. He's talking about attacking Syria, attacking a hornet's nest. Again, I just needed to clarify that point.
The majority of the Syrian people and the Syrian opposition we work with just want to live in peace, with dignity and freedom. And the day after any military action, we would redouble our efforts to achieve a political solution that strengthens those who reject the forces of tyranny and extremism. Finally, many of you have asked, why not leave this to other countries or seek solutions short of force? As several people wrote to me, we should not be the world's policeman. I agree. And I have a deeply held preference for peaceful solutions. Over the last 2 years, my administration has tried diplomacy and sanctions, warnings and negotiations. But chemical weapons were still used by the Assad regime.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm playing you a despicable speech from a despicable world leader. Really, really shocking. We'll be right back. Do stay with us. Welcome back, you with Truth News Radio. Well, playing this clip again by Obama has actually reinforced my perception that, in fact, this whole thrust that we've seen in the media, where it looks like a diplomatic resolution to the impasse has been reached, is a complete furphy. You see, it's been packaged to you as one thing, whereas in the package, it's actually something completely different. Now, I've been actually showing you the package. I unwrapped the package, and what you've heard here for the last 10 minutes is a relentless speech virtually guaranteeing military action and saying again and again in all these different ways why we must have it. And yet the title of the article that I pulled this from, which is on an Australian news website, says, "Barack Obama is to give Russia's chemical weapons plan a chance." And it says, President Obama has vowed to pursue a diplomatic initiative from Russia over Syria's chemical weapons use. Now, did you hear anything diplomatic in what we just played? I mean, for the last 10 minutes, all we've heard is threat, 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 threat. That gives you an indication of what's really going on here. You know, forget about the wrapping, forget about the nice pretty packaging of the articles that you're seeing. Listen to what the man's actually saying. And if you go back year after year, you'll find this with Obama, is that people presented him as being one thing, but when he actually speaks, he says something completely different. And you just listen to what he says, and it's all very clear. That's actually, we've seen that with other leaders in history, and we saw that with Adolf Hitler. You know, people said, oh, he's this great man. You listen to Hitler. And he was talking about bloodthirsty plans of conquest, but it was packaged to the people, to the German people, and to the rest of the world as you know, this man is actually restoring Germany's dignity. And so, with Barack Obama, what we're seeing is Barack Obama is pursuing a diplomatic initiative. He is not. Let's continue now with the rest of the speech, because I do want to actually finally get to the part where he does mention, in an almost token way, this this plan to put Syrian chemical weapons under UN control.
However, over the last few days, we've seen some encouraging signs, in part because of the credible threat of U.S. military action, as well as constructive talks that I had with President Putin. The Russian government has indicated a willingness to join with the international community in pushing Assad to give up his chemical weapons. The Assad regime has now admitted that it has these weapons and even said they joined the Chemical Weapons Convention, which prohibits their use. It's too early to tell whether this offer will succeed, and any agreement must verify that the Assad regime keeps its commitments. But this initiative has the potential to remove the threat of chemical weapons without the use of force, particularly because Russia is one of Assad's strongest allies. I have therefore asked the leaders of Congress to postpone a vote to authorize the use of force while we pursue this diplomatic path. I'm sending Secretary of State John Kerry to meet his Russian counterpart on Thursday, and I will continue my own discussions with President Putin. I've spoken to the leaders of two of our closest allies, France and the United Kingdom, and we will work together in consultation with Russia and China to put forward a resolution at the UN Security Council requiring Assad to give up his chemical weapons and to ultimately destroy them under international control.
Okay, there's the sucker punch, folks. A resolution at the Security Council requiring Assad to give up his weapons of mass destruction. We've now shifted the whole debate, the whole pretext for violence against Syria to a new issue, without ever having resolved the issue of whether Syria was in fact responsible for the chemical attack. Syria, by agreeing to this new initiative, will be walking into a trap. I have to say that they've really appear to have fallen for, where in fact a new Security Council resolution will be passed unanimously saying, you know, naughty, naughty Syria, you've got to hand over your weapon stockpile now. And if you don't, well, we're all united now. We're all together and we're going to bomb you. And of course, the terms of that would probably be harsher than what has actually been proposed now. Till now, what we've seen is the US president insist that the attacks would be extremely limited. But once they have a UN Security Council mandate, gloves are off. Now, I'd like to play you quickly a clip from Syrian Girl, a well-known YouTube personality, who takes what I'm saying to the next level, and you can see she's very, very worked up about it. When I listened to this yesterday, I wasn't quite sure whether she was right. After actually having surveyed the whole situation, I realise, in fact, she is spot on. So let me play to you now a clip from Syria Girl's YouTube channel. If Syria disarms chemical weapons, we lose the war.
Hi everyone, this is Syrian Girl. This may be the most important video that I will ever make. Like I said on InfoWars and in my most recent video, this chemical weapons talk has all been about getting Syria to remove their deterrent weapons, the WMDs, the chemical weapons. And just as I expected, this brinkmanship has now come to a climax where Kerry has proposed that Syria remove her chemical weapons in exchange for peace or a lack of a strike. And Russia, just as I said a year ago, looks after Russia first. And in order to save face and protect its interests in the region, it is putting pressure on Syria to accept this nasty proposal. Like I said on InfoWars only a few days ago, the only time the US military-industrial complex has ever attacked a country is when it has first been disarmed of its chemical weapons. This happened to Saddam in 1991, and then he was attacked in 2003 after another attempt to make sure that he disarmed. And Gaddafi stupidly gave up his weapons in 2003, December. And again, he was attacked. His nation was attacked, I should say. His nation was destroyed. Syria's only hope are those weapons. And anyone who accepts removing them for a few more years in power, for a few more years respite, is a traitor. And we will not accept this. It would be better to give those weapons to the insurgents. It would be better to surrender right now than give up those weapons. What was the point of this war? If they try to spin this as if some kind of victory, please, this would be the ultimate defeat. A strike would be better than this. A full-blown war would be better than this. And if anyone is deluded enough to think that giving up your weapon that is defending you will prevent a war, please, look at history. Russia, Iran, they're not allies. Your own weapons are your allies. You've only got yourselves to rely on. If the Syrian government accepts this proposal, they do not represent me. However, this will eternally be my flag, the Syrian flag. Thank you.
Very, very profound and serious words there from Syrian girl. And, you know, I understand the depth of feeling in what she is saying. I agree with most of what she says. Where I think I perhaps diverge a little bit is that I think that Syria in accepting the arrangement to basically put these weapons under UN supervision is simply placing themselves into a controlled scenario. As I said before, it's leading towards another UN Security Council resolution, which will then be free of all of these doubts about who really was responsible for the atrocities in Damascus and other ones, which would, it just removes the major obstacle to US intervention. The question of the weapons actually being a deterrent, I don't really see that, because the US, if it wants to attack, will simply attack from the air. The US doesn't particularly want to go in to Syria. And if they did, they would do in such force that it wouldn't matter. You know, it wouldn't matter whether the Syrians had these chemical deterrent weapons. Soldiers would go in chemical suits. They would destroy everything. It would be a complete annihilation of the regime. If Syria actually attempted to use these weapons as a deterrent, even in self-defense, it would simply be the carte blanche for a complete destruction of the Syrian regime. Therefore, I don't actually see, I don't quite go along with Syrian girl, which he says that they need to keep these weapons because it's a deterrent. The main point here is not walking into another trap. This is all about diplomacy. This is all about perceptions. And the Syrian government has been pushing a very strong angle, and the Russians as well, that they simply were not responsible for the atrocities that we saw. And now the shift of focus is going to change. And that's a bad sign. It's a bad sign for Syria. Anyway, do stay with us for the second hour. I've got Scott Bartle coming on to talk about some really important Australian issues. Don't go away. Stay with us.